kill my dog.
This old dog is still alive and he's in the studio. Hi, I'm John Byrne, executive editor of Business Week magazine. Welcome to our podcast of Behind This Week's Cover Story, our series that gets inside the making of this issue's major story. You just heard Youth Culture Killed My Dog by the Brooklyn-based band They Might Be Giants. And yes, we are going to talk about youth culture. This week, in fact, we're taking a look at the emergence of a global digital youth culture. The story zeroes in on children of the web. It's about how the second generation internet is spawning a global youth culture and what businesses can do about it. A tremendous amount, of course, has been written about social networking websites on the one hand and on globalization on the other. But this story explores some new territory. In essence, it's about the intersection where Web 2.0 and globalization meet. Thanks to the rapid worldwide spread of broadband connections, tens of millions of young digital elites are in the vanguard of a fast emerging culture. Because of smartphones, blogs, instant messaging, MySpace, and the like, young people scattered all over are instantly aware of what's happening to others like them everywhere else. It's a highly influential group that's sharing ideas and information across borders and driving demand for consumer electronics, entertainment, cars, food, and fashion. We'll be back in a moment with senior writer Steve Hamm, the author of our cover story and our expert on global youth culture.
Sharing is good. That's the philosophy that has guided Sun since the beginning. We believe sharing creates better ideas that can move business, society, and the world forward. Visit sun.com to learn more.
So welcome, Steve.
It's good to be here, John.
Now, given your advanced age, your gray hair, the diaper you wear, how did you get started on a story on global youth culture?
I don't know. The last time I was hip was in 1975, John, but at least I was hip.
What happened in 75? How do I really know you were hip?
I could show you pictures, you know.
Hair down.
Or show you my scars. I don't know.
Hair down to your shoulders?
At least. Yes, definitely.
So how'd you get started on this?
Well, a few months ago, I was interviewing Ramalinga Raju, who's one of the, he's the CEO of one of the top Indian tech services firms.
Just pronouncing his name makes you hip in my book.
Well, I'm hip in India. I'm very popular there. Anyway, a few months ago, I was interviewing Ramalinga Raju, who's the CEO of Satyam Computer, one of the top Indian tech outsourcers. And after the formal interview, we got to chatting, and he made the observation that our sons, who are both teenagers, because of the internet, had a lot more in common with each other than one would expect from two people living 9,000 miles apart and in cultures that are vastly different. And so I went with that. I thought about that, and I thought about the implications of that on business, on society, and I just went out and kind of started searching the world to find out if it was true.
So he planted the seed for the story.
He planted the seed.
Over a year ago.
Well, it was actually more like 6 months ago. It was last year. You've made the point before that it takes me a long time to go from, like, inspiration to actually publishing stories, and it's true in some cases, you know. But it's not because I'm old.
Okay, where do you
it's
take
an... because I'm thoughtful.
But where do you take an idea like that? I mean, as a journalist.
What I did with it initially was just go out and affirm that it's true. Just talk to a lot of people, both, you know, kind of the smart observers, the kids. I said, get me in touch with a lot of kids. And I, you know, so I would email. I'd be talking to kids in Macedonia and Egypt and just got a sense that, yeah, they felt connected. So it wasn't just relying on, you know, kind of the experts to tell me this. I spoke to the kids and, you know, I got a really good sense of people who had a sense of community and of connectedness.
And what did you find?
Well, they feel an identity with one another. They feel less kind of nationalism and patriotism than you might otherwise expect from people their age. I think partly the fact that we have these horrendous wars caused by nationalism these days is kind of turning them off to that too. But I think their connectedness is a piece of it. Look, you go on YouTube these days, The first half a page is all going to be very common stuff. You know, it used to be Comedy Central until they pulled that off. But you get to the middle of the first page, already you're seeing animes, you're seeing Brazilian soccer clips. I mean, it goes multinational almost immediately. So these meeting places, these virtual town squares, are international virtual town squares.
Okay, so and what's the so what of this?
Well, the so what is that both startups and established businesses really have an opportunity here to understand this culture. You can figure out how to create new products and services that are going to appeal to them, right? And then you can actually include them in helping you come up with these things, you know, kind of co-creation mm-hmm. with your customer.
Right.
Then there's the marketing, and you've seen a lot of the stuff on YouTube and other places where there's, you know, the funny video gets people hooked on a product or something like that. Can't be too heavy-handed, but as long as it's funny, you can bring people in. And then I'd say that the last part, and this is something that people haven't really talked about too much, is that this youth culture, these people spread around the world who share kind of interest in technology and knowledge and kind of a worldliness, they can be your workforce. And not only can they be your workforce, you can use Web 2.0 services to find them. You can, you know, search blogs or MySpace profiles or Orkut profiles, and you can find the people with the kind of the profile that you want working for you or helping you with marketing or what.
Now, did you discover that there are, in fact, global hotspots for youth culture?
Yes, and they are truly global. I was very pleased to see that. I had FeedBurner do an analysis of one day in May.
Okay, what's FeedBurner?
FeedBurner is a company that manages blogs for the top bloggers in the world. It manages like 65,000 of the top blogs or something like that. And basically, they handle all the monitoring and management of the flow, right? So they know exactly how much is happening. They're measuring the number of blog postings and blog comments, right? So we ran the numbers on a day, and we a couple different days in May, but I just chose one. You know, it was all over the place. I mean, you know, you had – obviously, you have your hot spots like San Francisco, New York, L.A. in the United States. But London is right up there. Rome is right up there. Mumbai.
Tokyo?
Mumbai. You know, it's interesting. On the day that I did it, Tokyo wasn't in the top 30. But, you know, different places do different things. Well, number one, I do know that the most popular language in the blogosphere is now Japanese, not English. But for some reason on that day, they must have been taking a siesta from blogging or something like that.
And did you visit any of these hotspots?
I did indeed.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
Well, I happened to be right at the beginning when I was just starting out, I was in Mumbai. And there I discovered a young woman named Malani Agrawal, who is a disc jockey at a radio station there. And she operates something called Friday Club. It's actually, it has chapters in about 10 cities, a bunch in India, London, Hong Kong, Toronto, New York. And basically, it's a place where people get together on Friday nights and go bar hopping. There are these international type. Any city that you're visiting, you can look up your pals who are in the Friday Club and be assured of a fun, safe night on the town, that kind of thing. So I talked to her early on. And then one of my editors suggested that I pick a place to really focus on, to kind of give the story some focus. And that editor, John, was you.
Uh-huh. Where did I suggest?
Well, you kept pushing me towards Seoul and Tokyo.
That's true. I admit
that. But I found that while they're very, very active, they are not the most outbound and interactive with the rest of the globe. They're very active kind of within their own scope.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's been a lot of anime that's been pulled out of there by Westerners. But the Japanese are basically posting it on, you know, I mean, it's on the TV shows and people elsewhere grab it and translate it. And I mean, literally, anime TV shows are broadcast in Japan. People pick them up off the TV or I don't know what where they pick it up off of. Within 6 hours, they're translated into 10 languages and posted on YouTube or
wow.
other kind of places.
Wow.
So these are some serious fans with some real language skills.
So you ended up going actually to
London.
A place that I lived for 3 years.
That's right. That's right.
And it's happening not necessarily in the King's Road anymore.
Well, I don't even know what the King's Road is, I'm afraid.
That's oh, how... you were so on. Yeah.
But when I got to London, it was happening. There's a lot happening in Soho,
right,
which has, you know, been hip. But there's just a lot of startup activity, which is really refreshing because, you know, for a while, a lot of it was in the U.S., but I found that there's a tremendous amount of really kind of innovative Web 2.0 startup activity there, not just Me Too ideas, kind of cool ideas that are really taking off globally. And I hung out with a bunch of the entrepreneurs. It was really a tough assignment. I think in 5 nights that I was there, I went to 4 parties. And one was especially pleasant. It was in a penthouse on top of an apartment building in overlooking Soho.
I'm surprised an old guy like you even survived.
Well, one of the funny things about it was I was actually milling around up there with all these entrepreneurs, and I was talking to 2 young PR women from Spark PR who happened to be helping me. Very attractive. Up comes 2 guys, entrepreneurs. And I'm sure, you know, they're just going to talk to me for a minute, and then pretty soon they're going to just be talking to the 2 young PR girls. Within 5 minutes, they had turned their backs on the 2 young PR girls, and they were just talking to me, which just goes to show you the power of the press.
How flattering.
Yeah, it was. Yes, I knew it was all about me.
Now, by its nature, the story obviously covers a lot of territory. So how'd you bring focus to it?
Well, there's 2 ways. One was by focusing on London. The other thing I did was kind of a matrix because one of the other editors said, use as your main focus a company and its campaign. And I found a company that happened to be in London that made it all work very nicely. It's Unilever. And it was Unilever's Axe deodorant spray for young men. And it so happens, you know, it's been very popular. They've done a bunch of YouTube stuff. They entered the U.S. a couple years ago and had great success. And they've been planning for a couple of years to relaunch the product with new fragrances, so new formulations, new marketing, and also new packaging. And they did this very much thinking totally about doing it globally. They're in 75 countries, but they've kind of treated them as separate entities before. And now they said, we're going to go global. We're going to think about it globally, and we're going to roll out globally. And that's what they're in the middle of right now. And the thing they came up with, and this is pretty funny, they decided, oh, for marketing, we ought to have kind of a phrase. They decided it would be kind of the international language of lust as expressed by young women.
Lust for underarm deodorant.
Well, yeah. Well, the young men spray themselves liberally with this. It's not underarm deodorant. This is body spray, man.
Body spray.
And it's very...
Wait a minute. Who uses body deodorant?
Yeah, well, things have
as
changed.
Opposed to
things
underarm
have changed,
deodorant.
Things have changed from your day. All right. So now...
My body doesn't smell enough for me to be spraying deodorant over it.
It's only partly about deodorant. What it's about is perfume. What they got is young men now wear perfume. This is what it's about. And then they do it all over the globe. Even in places where they didn't even used to wear deodorant, they're now spraying themselves with perfume that also has some deodorant, you know, characteristics. So anyway, they came up with this thing, and they have a phrase. They didn't want it to be in any particular language, so they came up a phrase. And I'm going to say it first just so you hear, and then I'm going to say it in the way that they have the women saying it in their ads. The phrase is bomb chikawawa.
No.
Bomb chikawawa.
What does it mean?
It means...
Nothing.
I'm nuts for you, boy. That's what it means. It means that you drive me crazy, boy.
It sounds Australian.
Well, no, and here's the way the girls say it on their ads. They say, bomb chicka wah wah. It's only with much higher voices.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, it's an expression that a guy with the deodorant walks past them. They smell those beautiful, fragrant high notes, and they practically rip his clothes off.
Bomb chicka wah wah.
That's it. You know, that's not the way they say it, but that's another way.
Bomb chicka wah wah. Say it 3 times. No, 10 times faster without stopping. Let's see if you can do that.
You'll probably say something dirty, you know, and have to be censored.
Which leads me to this.
Right.
I'm sure that you came across quite a few irreverent, if not obscene, examples of how some, particularly entrepreneurial companies, might try to appeal to global culture. I bet you some of them didn't get into the story. What didn't get in the story that you wish you were able to get into
the
story?
The bomb chikawawa girls.
What do you mean you didn't get it into the story? That's in the story,
well,
isn't it?
It's in text, but there, you'll find no photograph of the Bum Chicka Wah Wah Girls, which is the girl band that they created to popularize.
Steve, why is that?
Well, when I thought about a photograph of them, I thought, oh, they'll just be attractive young women, you know, in a group. But it turns out that the Bum Chicka Wah Wah Girls are scantily clad.
Really?
They basically wear bikinis, I guess you'd say.
What do you mean, Steve? I guess you would say. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if they're bikinis or they're even scant. I mean, like...
Okay, but is it surprising, in fact, that, you know, a very conservative, large company like Unilever would put this out?
Well, Unilever gives a lot of... Each of their brands is very independent. Unilever is an old line, you know, consumer packaged goods company, but they're different than Procter & Gamble. I think they push the brands, not the master brand, not the corporate brand.
Right.
And I think that gives them a tremendous amount of freedom to really go and do exactly what their customers would, you know, would appeal to them. So I think that points out a very smart thing about their branding.
So what was the coolest thing you discovered when you were working on a story?
Well, I really liked it when these English-based companies would mix stuff that was online, kind of virtual world stuff, with stuff that was in the real world. And I found a couple of interesting examples of this. One that was really cool was there's a company called Moo that's based in London. It's actually based right in downtown London. And they print these calling cards. They're like a business card. They're about half as wide. They have a photograph that you pick or you download on one side and your web identity on the other. So it's not really a business card. These are cards that the kids trade in person or maybe they trade them online. And they're really kind of cool things, you know. And you pick these things up. There's something about it that's very appealing. And I liked that. And the other thing I really liked was I discovered our virtual world alternative reality game called Perplex City, put out by a company called Mind Candy in London. And they do all these games, which are kind of collaborative games, or in some cases, people collaborate on them to answer the puzzles. In other cases, they go as loners. But the big one they did, it lasted more than a year, was a global treasure hunt where they had all these clues. Some of them were in newspapers, some of them were in radio broadcasts, some were online, some were in some cards that they sold, some were in their magazine. And basically, you followed the clues, and it was very complicated because, I mean, it took somebody literally 15 months to solve the first one and dig up a buried treasure that was in a park in central England. So that was cool.
So, Steve, in addition to the cover, you did a narrated slideshow for online on what, the hotspots in global youth culture?
Well, I did two slideshows, actually. One was about the hottest new Web 2.0 services that came out of Europe. And that's a lot of fun. Has Juiced and some of these others.
Juiced
is a website out of Europe that's being launched by the guys that invented Skype and Kazaa. You know, these are some really expert guys.
And what does it do?
Well, what they're doing is it's basically TV on the web. Right now they have Comedy Central and some other properties where you'll be able to go there and subscribe. I'm not sure. They're still in beta, so they haven't figured out how to charge for this or whether it's just going to be based on ads. But, you know, you'll have Comedy Central clips and stuff like that.
And what's your other slideshow on?
My other slideshow is on my journey, basically, to discover the global youth culture. I tell the story, you know, Ramalinga Raju, we're in India, we're talking about this stuff.
Bum Chicka Wah Wah.
We got Bum Chicka Wah Wah in it. Yes, exactly. So,
Steve, terrific story. I'm glad you traveled around the world on
virtually
RT&E.
Actually,
Mumbai.
There's a little story.
London, God knows where else.
I proposed originally, my conceit was around the world in 18 days. Steve Hamm flies around the globe, you know, landing down in the hot spots and taking the reader on the journey of discovery around the globe. Great idea, I thought. But I guess it was a little pricey, so the kibosh came down.
Well, I think the story does not suffer from the kibosh. In fact, it's a great story. I refer all our listeners to read the story, watch the slideshows, and just remember this. No dogs were harmed in the making of this podcast. You've got to kill my dog.